session number 10589, rule 6.
We're talking about Montgomery. Of course, I suppose I was in a privileged position that he had this concept of the value of broadcasting, and I was the broadcaster, so that's how it was. But to illustrate it, I've already mentioned that towards the end of the war, largely because of Monty's idiotic press conference, and his failure to get over at his press conference after the Ardennes battle, what he really wanted to say. And I was sent down to General Bradley's headquarters, away from Monty. He disapproved of this very much, although I left behind a team of people under Chester Wilmot who could very well look after the BBC coverage of the 21 Army Group. But when the war was over, I was still down with Bradley, and a few days after the end of the war, in Bradley's mess one evening, an orderly came to me and said, there's a telephone call for you, sir. Now, you must realise that telephone communications were very difficult in those days. I mean, all ordinary civilian telephone communication in Germany was wiped out, and these were military telephone communications, and very scratchy and that sort of thing. But I went to this army telephone, and an orderly at the other end put me through to no less than Monty, who was, 250 miles away from me, up in the north, in Army Group, 21 Army Group. And he said, Frank, would you like to go into Berlin with me tomorrow? He said, I've been nominated as the British signatory to the signing of the official German surrender. Eisenhower's going in to sign for America, and Zhukov is signing for Russia, and somebody's going to sign for the French. And would you like to come? I'll take you into Berlin with me if you'd like to come. And he said, can you get here by 8 o'clock in the morning? And I said, well, I don't know whether I can or not, but by gum, I'd like to come with you. I'll do my best. He said, all right, I shan't wait for you. So I had to drive through the night. And you can imagine what sort of drive it was, because all the bridges were blown, all the roads were cratered. There were rough tracks everywhere to get you through from one position to another. And I did it by going from headquarters to headquarters all the way up from where I was right up to the north, and each headquarters directed me through. In some cases, they sent a man to ride with me to the next headquarters and see me on. And I managed to get to this airfield of Monty's and get onto his Dakota with only a few minutes to spare, I remember, not even having shaved. And so we went into Berlin, and I think I must have been... I think I must have been the first Allied British reporter anyway to get into Berlin, and for this signing ceremony, which was absolutely memorable because we were there before, we were there sort of 10 o'clock in the morning, something like that. The drive through Berlin itself was absolutely fascinating because everybody was asking what the state of Berlin was, and now I was getting a look at it for the first time.
And what was it?
Oh, devastated, of course. I mean, not a single building left standing. I mean, literally, we'd knocked it to bits. The western end of the city, which is what we saw, we landed at Tempelhof and drove through to the Berlin Yacht Club, which was the building, a building which had been patched up, and where this great document was to be signed. And there were a few villas around the Yacht Club which were in reasonable state, and Monty was assigned to one villa, and Eisenhower to another, and so on. And the entourage, like me, we were in part of the villa, and we were waiting to be summoned for this great signing event. And the hours went by, and nothing came. And eventually, it turned out that there were great squabbles going on about the translation of this document, and every word that, because it had to be in four languages. And the translations had to be agreed by all four parties. And the Russians were insisting on referring a lot of the translations back to Moscow for verification and acceptance. And this was taking a long time. Everything that had to go back to Moscow always took a long time. Eventually, it was 7 o'clock in the evening, if I remember rightly. And Eisenhower had said, if it's not ready for signing by 7 o'clock in the evening, I'm going back and it'll be unsigned. And Monty had said the same thing. But they got it ready for signing. And the signing took place at a huge the largest table I think I've ever seen, a great circular table, massive great thing, under television lights, and the Russians had great 35mm film cameras there to film it all and so on, and Eisenhower signed, and Zhukov signed, and Monty signed, and the Frenchman signed. And then we were all led into a great banqueting chamber where there was the most amazing meal spread out, simply incredible meal, which the Russians had laid on in honor of their guests, and they had all their great internationally known artists there to entertain, dancers and singers, the Red Army Choir and the Cossack dancers and so forth. And alas, we could only stay for a very small part of it because Eisenhower insisted on going, and since Eisenhower insisted on going, Monty insisted on going. So back we went to Tempelhof and flew off in the night. But the point was that Monty had sufficient regard for his BBC correspondent to send for him, although he was 250 miles away, to go into Berlin with him for this really quite historic moment.